Good morning. Appreciated your thoughts about the crucifixion, Mike. It'll kind of tie in with today's lesson, because how can anything like the crucifixion so cruel, so ugly, so dishonoring, how can anything that terrible be good? And that the amazing thing is that the ugliest moment in the history of our world was also the most beautiful moment, the most cleansing, redemptive, glorious moment, sacrificial moment in our history as well. So appreciate you saying that, Mike. Today, we're going to look at having joy in trials. And our text is going to be, James 1, 2 through 4. James 1, 2 through 4. But before that, I want to say that my heart soars like a hawk right now. The man that was instrumental in leading me to Christ is here this morning. Jim Bruins, his very devoted to God wife, Maureen, and I'm just so honored that you're here. Honored that the rest of you are here, because it's not an easy thing these days to come together and to worship, and there are plenty of challenges in doing so, and for all of you that are joining us this morning, online or in the parking lot, greetings, and I'll also say this, if there's any lesson, any class that you get a lot out of, or you have a friend that might have need. And I think today's lesson, if I do it justice, today's lesson is needed by everyone, Christian and non, that these lessons are now available not only through our church website, where you can download them at no charge, but they're on YouTube as well. So just an invite to do that. Anyway, let's go ahead and read James 1, 2 through 4, which is very similar in some aspects to what Andrew just read in Romans chapter 5. Okay, James 1, starting in verse 2. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. If you tell your Christian friends that you've been growing as a Christian, and you're learning how to consider it all joy when you suffer, they're going to question your sanity. It isn't logical to consider something joyful when it's stressful, painful, unpleasant, just not logical on the surface. But once we see the big picture, then it's totally logical, and I hope to share that with you today. So we looked at these verses 7 weeks ago on our online class in James, and we spent about 5 to 8 minutes on these three verses right here, and I was bothered. You know, how long do you take? How long do you spend when you're teaching a Bible class? This is getting away from my face, Nathan. Is it working, or do I need to push it? Okay. So how long do you spend on any given Bible verse in a Bible class where you're trying to get through the whole book? But as I taught on this, I said, there's so much more that I need to hear. There's so much more that I think many Christians need to hear. Thank you. Now, I always have to figure out which Bill told me. You don't want to bump it. Okay, let me just see if that's going to work. Yeah. How long have you spent on it? So my point is this, that I was bothered by it, and two different people wanted, it may have been three, but I know two for sure, wanted this to be more developed, because it's so critical, and it's so difficult. And so I said, yes, we will develop this a little bit further, because it's so, not only difficult, but it's so extremely important to our lives. And if you'll give me just a moment, I was told that I could change a few things on this screen that you won't see. I'm brand new at it, this aspect, but I'm going to do that. And I am ready, and I'm sorry, very unprofessional, but I'm ready to focus now again. So, two main thoughts for this morning are going to come from verse 2. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials. Those are the only two thoughts we're going to look at. Consider it joy and when you encounter various trials. But we're going to take it in reverse order, or it wouldn't make sense. How can you consider anything joy if you don't understand it? And so I think it's really important that we look at what the situation is before we figure out what our reaction should be. So we're going to look at the situation first, that is running into trials, sufferings, stress, and then we'll look at what it means and how to go about considering it all joy. Okay, so starting with when you encounter various trials. So, brothers, sisters, how well do you do in your trials? I mean, I'd like you, even if it's just a guess, to grade yourself right now. For every 10 trials that you experience, from little things to big things, from losing your wallet, I'm really good at that one, to a flat tire on the way to a very important wedding, to a severe health issue, to betrayal by friends, from the small to the large, how do you do? How do you handle your trials? Because I tell you what, I do pretty well once in a great while. No false humility. This is so difficult to consider it joy when I'm in a trial that I'd like to ask you, what do you think out of any given 10 trials, how often do you handle it well without grumbling? We can read in the Bible that that's very offensive to God because it's actually blaming God. This isn't fair and it's your fault is really what grumbling means. So how often when you have a stressful time, a challenging time, is your attitude positive and you say, my God is greater than this trial and I'm going to consider it joy because of the end result? So that's just a question that only you can answer, but I'd like you to ask, grade yourself. It's this weird concept, just strange. As I said, your friends are going to think that you need a shrink if you say, yeah, I'm learning how to consider joy when I suffer. It's strange to consider something good when it's unpleasant and painful. And you know this. So we're going to look at first 8 reasons that God allows trials. Sometimes he causes them, sometimes he just allows them, but 8 reasons. The first one is to test the strength of our faith. It takes incredible strength, incredible faith to say, I'm going to find joy in this. I'm going to consider it all joy because my God is in control. Great faith, great strength, but it tests our faith, and you know that. Every time you have a trial, probably this morning or at least in the last week you had a few, it pushes you to ask yourself, What should I do now? Should I give glory to God? Should I whimper over the unfairness of the situation? But incredible, incredible strength. In Deuteronomy 13, God allows trials. One is to test the strength of our faith. It says, if a prophet or a dreamer of dreams arises from among you and gives a sign or a wonder, and the sign or the wonder comes true concerning which he spoke about you, saying, now get this part, this is a false prophet who says, it's going to rain tomorrow at 2:15. And when you see it rain at 2:15, you need to know that Yahweh is not God, Baal is, or Moloch, or anyway, that's what's happening here. It says, when something comes true that a prophet predicts, and he says, let us go after other gods, whom you have not known, and let us serve them, you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams. For the Lord your God is testing you to find out if you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. So trials, one purpose is they test the strength of our faith. A second reason is to humble us and remind us to trust the Lord and not ourselves. Got any problem with that? You ever find yourself when you suffer going, oh, what am I going to do? Or at least thinking that, what am I going to do? I think that's the first normal reaction when confronted unexpectedly, especially with a problem. Is, oh no, what will I do now? And I think it's okay. I'm convinced it is when I read the scriptures. As long as we quickly say, what am I talking about? Yes, I have responsibility, but this is on my God's shoulders, who gives me guidance, who supports me. I will not fear, even though I'm in the valley of death. Not will I do, but God, what will you do, and how do you want to use me in this situation? So as an example, Luke 5:4, Jesus said to Simon, put out into the deep water and let down your net for a catch. Look at Peter's reaction. He says, Simon answered and said, Master, we worked hard all night and caught nothing, but I will do as you say and let down the nets. The point is this. Peter trusts in himself. You'll see by his later reaction as well. Peter must be thinking this. I'm a professional fisherman. Jesus, he's really good, but he's a teacher of religion. That's his realm. Let down your nets after all these hours. Look, nothing's happening right now. This is a thought because he's trusting in his wisdom instead of saying, oh, the creator of the universe just told me to let down my nets for a catch. That would have been appropriate. How long did it take Peter to get this right? Or the other apostles, every time Jesus says, why are you afraid? And so in verse 8, they let down the nets, and the catch was so great, they had to involve another boat. The nets began to break. These approximately 30-foot-long boats began to sink. And I've had a 30-foot-long boat in the same shape. We had 3,600 pounds of fish on it. It went lower, but it didn't sink. We're talking about a lot of fish. It was a miracle. Peter falls down at Jesus' feet and says, go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man. I didn't trust you. I didn't understand your goodness or your power. And whether he thought these exact thoughts, I don't know. But he didn't trust the Lord. But he trusted his own wisdom. And that's one of the things that trials teach us, is to trust the Lord, not our own strength, not our own minds. A third reason for trials is to teach us not to depend upon physical things. It's really easy to fall into that trap, to say, you know, if I just had $10,000 more, that would solve my current problems. It's real easy to just say, man, if both knees worked really well, my life would be so much better. But whatever the physical thing is, 100% of all human beings had fallen into that trap of looking at the physical, and the Jews did it over and over and over again. They would look at the great army, I think it was Sennacherib's army, but 185,000 Assyrians surrounding Hezekiah and his Jerusalem, and they said, essentially, we're toast, because they looked at the physical and overlooked the great and awesome power of God. A fourth, here's an example, John 6:5. Therefore, Jesus, lifting his eyes and seeing a large crowd was coming to him, said to Philip, where are we to buy bread so that these may eat? There were thousands. This he was saying to test him. Is Philip going to put his trust in physical things and in sight, or in spiritual things and in God, and walk by faith? So he was testing him, for he himself knew what he was intending to do. Philip answered, 200 denarii, $30,000 approximately, worth of bread is not sufficient for them, for everyone to receive a little bit. Philip's saying, I don't know. We can't do it. Forgetting, not only was he with the one that makes wheat that you make bread out of, but he was with the one that made everything, according to John chapter 1, verse 1 through 3. Colossians chapter 1, Hebrews chapter 1. Jesus is the creator. So Jesus wanted to test his faith. And Nathanael, like us, didn't pass that test well. But Jesus never gave up on his disciples, nor does he ever give up on us. And you ask the people in here that are even older than me, if there are any. And you know, this is a lifetime training ground. And if you grade yourself correctly and you go, wow, 10 out of 10 right now, then please, brothers and sisters, tell me your secret. Because I imagine even our elders are not going to give themselves a 10 out of 10. There's room to grow. It's tough being a human being, living in a physical body, and thinking and living in a spiritual way all the time. But we're not to trust physical things, one of the tougher lessons to learn. Trials teach us to focus on heaven. Paul said in Philippians chapter 4, this is chapter 1, and that's a typo right there. Philippians chapter 1, 23 and 24, he says, but I am hard pressed from both directions, having a desire to depart, to die, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, for that is very much better. Yet to remain on in the flesh is more necessary for your sake. Paul couldn't wait to get to heaven. And I'm assuming that the older ones in here, like me again, we think more and more about that. I'm ready, Lord. I'm ready. I'm growing, and use me as long as you can, but I can't wait to get home. And trials help us think about those things. They also help us reveal what we really love. What we really love, Matthew 13:22. You know about the parable of the sower and the seed. The guy's out there. Jesus tells a parable. He's throwing seed out. It lands on four kinds of ground. But some of the seed, which represents the beautiful word of God, some of the seed fell on soil that had a lot of thorns in it. And so Jesus says, and the one on whom seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man, a person, who hears the word and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of wealth. And oh, how deceitful it is. The deceitfulness of wealth choke the word and it becomes unfruitful. Now, if you've read that parable, you see that in the parable, when the seed fell on the thorny soil, it became a plant. You can't choke a seed. But the seed became a plant in the thorny soil. It produced a believer, someone who heard the word and received it and responded to it. But as his life goes on, he takes his eyes off of the Lord and focuses on the physical, focuses on the things that we love, he loves. The deceitfulness of wealth, the worry of the world, and so forth. Trials reveal where our heart really is, and we can change. If you're thinking about your failure, so am I. I'm not thinking about yours, I'm thinking about mine. If you're thinking about how often you fail, praise God. That means you care. And that pleases our Lord because you will get better if you call on Him. Trials teach us to value God's blessings, not the world. Even in the midst of a trial, there are blessings. Hebrews 11:26, considering the reproach of Christ. This is Moses. Considering the reproach of Christ, the reproach, not the blessings. Greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. He was looking to the reward. We kind of just talked about that. The reward of heaven is one of many rewards. But there are so many blessings. And we're talking about them right now in our trials. There are so many blessings that may not even come from trials that we just enjoy. And being an American, if you've ever been in a third world country, you are aware of blessings that many Americans are not. I'll say it probably a couple times every year, but I've been in a place so poor in Mexico that the people at that time lived in houses, one little room houses you couldn't stand up in all the way, made out of sticks. You could see through them. You could see the blackness. The doors, I don't know if they had a door, but the opening for the door was black in there. The floor was mud, dirt, and insects would crawl in and out, and I go, oh, oh. What would it be like to bathe in the same river that you drink out of and to have almost nothing, no air conditioning, no heat in the winter? What would it be like? And that's one of just a physical blessing that we have, but the blessings of God are answered prayer. Friends that are priceless, that lift us up or tell us about the gospel, encourage us when we need it. Teach us to value the blessings of God. Our trials help us develop enduring strength for greater usefulness. You know the concept, because I'll bet most of you have worked at it sometime in your life. And if you ever watch Arnold Schwarzenegger when he's young, this guy's massive, right? But he's young. He was the youngest man in history at that time. I don't know if it's changed, to ever win the Mr. Universe or whatever he won, but the number one in the world, right? And he says, I love it. Every time my muscles burn, he's under stress. He's in pain, lifting these weights to become massive. And it took the stress and the tearing, the gentle tearing of his muscles, which happens when you weightlift, it took that to make him strong. And that's exactly what the trials of our life do. If we persevere, if we try, instead of being fearful and taking matters in our own hands, if we say, God, I don't get it. I'm scared to death right now, but I'm going to do it your way. Our faith becomes stronger. And a really important one, number 8, well, I'll read Romans 5:3. Not only this, but we also exult in our tribulation. We exult in them. I looked up that word, by the way, because I just thought it meant to be exuberant, to exult in tribulation. It caught me by surprise. To exult in your tribulation, it means to talk about it. It means to boast, not in your power, but to exult in your tribulation, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance. God is using me. And it's something we can tell our believer friends who may not have obeyed the gospel yet. We can be honest. I hate suffering. But God is using me for good. He's growing me. He's making me better. And to exult is to boast about it with joy. I didn't know that. And the last one. Trials enable us to help others. Don't we know that? If we suffer a severe trial, a severe loss, any comfort is good. Not necessarily advice, but any comfort. I'm so sorry. I'm going to pray for you every day. And that's helpful. I need to hear that. But when they have gone through the same trial and the same loss that I have, then I know that they know what I'm going through, and it's really meaningful to me. And you've suffered thousands of trials in your life, and you have so much wisdom and goodness to share with other people because of your experiences. Use it. Use it. I know you're hurting. And like I said, advice isn't the first thing we should give out. But maybe when the time is right, say, I know that God can use this for good. Hang in there. I'm with you. So all these 8 things enable us to help others. 2 Corinthians 1:3 says something like this. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction so that we will be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. So consider it all joy. That's the goal. Why should we? Well, we've been given 8 reasons, and there are more. But 8 reasons why we should, when we see our trial, say, this is painful, but I'm going to handle it the way God asked me to. It's not to act joyfully. Anybody can put on an act. It isn't to act joyful. It's to look at the trial and consider it all joy because God will use it for good if you are His child. Consider it. It's a mental thing. And I just want to point this out because it's really easy to mix up joy and happiness, and sometimes they're the same. In the Bible, sometimes joy and happiness overlap. And sometimes when Paul wrote the book of Philippians, it's about joy. He said he was writing these things while weeping. Sometimes joy is an internal process of trusting God and enduring and saying, I'm clinging to you. I'm not going to give up. Strengthen me. But consider this, that the message of this lesson is not teaching you, look forward to your suffering. Look forward to your pain. It's really great. I'm not saying that because Jesus didn't look forward to the pain. In Hebrews 12:2, it says, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, not enjoyed the cross. He endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. What motivated Jesus to consider it all joy? The fact that he was going to rescue us, and save us. And that joy gave him the strength to endure the cross. In spite of the shame, in spite of how terrible it was in his prayer the night before, let this cup pass from me. It was the end result, is what I'm getting at, that allowed him to do this because of the joy that would come eventually. And that's what I'm saying for us. We look at the end result. We're suffering financially, physically, emotionally. It doesn't matter. And we say, God, I know that the end result is good. Therefore, I'm going to consider it joy, even though I don't like it. He doesn't expect you to. Just like Jesus didn't enjoy the cross, but there was an end result that motivated him to go through it. Here's a couple promises that encourage us. God limits our trials. If you bake and you pour a bunch of flour into a sieve, and somehow you spilled the rice and the rice got into the flour, the rice isn't going to go through. Is it called a sieve? Whatever the thing is that it has, it's like screen and you go like this and the flour comes out, whatever that's called. It sifts out the stuff you don't want, and that's what God does for us. It's really important to know this. In Job 1, 11 through 12, but put forth your hand, God says to Satan, who says, Job is serving you for the wrong reason. He's just serving you because you make his life good, because you've made him rich and pleasant and all this kind of thing. So you take that stuff away and Job will curse you to your face, God. And God says, but put your forth your hand now and touch all that he has, and he will surely, I'm sorry, this is Satan speaking, but put forth your hand now, touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face, God. Then the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not put forth your hand on him. So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord. Satan had the right to do anything he wanted except for touching Job physically. So he killed all of his children. He took away all of his wealth. He turned his wife against him. Job's grief was great, and yet God limited what Satan could do. And as you know, then Satan said, well, okay, let me hurt him physically. And God said, okay, you can do that too. You can hurt him physically. You just can't kill him. It wasn't a please don't kill him. It was, here's the limit. Satan could not cross it. He did the same for Peter. This amazes me. Luke 22, right before the crucifixion, 31, Jesus says to Peter, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. He had to ask God. And Jesus goes on to say, but I've prayed for you. But he has to ask permission to hurt you. And God will give him permission sometimes to make you better, to make us trust him more. He had to ask permission in the Old Testament. Satan has to ask God permission in the New Testament. 1 Corinthians 10:13, pretty clear. No temptation has come upon you, but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. Have you ever asked yourself the question, or I don't think I can handle this. I'm over my head. This is too much. I have felt that way before, but I know what God says. He says, no, you're stronger than, I mean, this is what he's implying. He may not answer me directly, but Mike, you're stronger than you think you are because you have me and my word, and you can handle this trial right here. Consider all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials. As I said, rejoicing in trials is illogical to people who don't know God. They haven't learned what we know. Everyone rejoices in the good times, right? Yeah. Everyone does. But God's children, we learn to rejoice at all times, not just the times when rejoicing is natural, but when it's unnatural. It's one of the most difficult commands, in my opinion. I don't know if there's a more difficult command, but I think rejoicing, considering all joy when you encounter various trials, is at least one of the hardest, if not the hardest command in the Bible. I think it's harder than loving your enemies or forgiving people who betrayed you, to rejoice or count it joy when you're suffering. It takes tremendous faith. I love this saying. I stole it from somebody. His name is John Piper. But I think he's spot on. He says, God is the most glorified in us when we're the most satisfied in Him. That makes sense to me. If I'm suffering and I go, I hate this, God, but you're on my side, you're going to make me better, something good's going to come from it, and people see our attitude, right? Our children, neighbors, people we work with, people at church who may be struggling or not even Christians yet. And when we are the most satisfied in God, I believe that He's the most glorified in us or by us. Rejoicing in trials, as I said, is illogical. It's mostly done by Christians. Therefore, we Christians should out-rejoice the world. We should rejoice more than anybody else that isn't a child of God. We should be out-rejoicing the world because we can do it in our trials and in our blessings. What a soul-winning opportunity to share this, especially with believers that don't know this and may not have become a child of God yet. What an awesome conversation piece to discuss with people, Christians or not, believers or not. Do you know it's possible to get the most out of your trials? Do you know that if you're a Christian, something very good will come from it? So whether you're online or in a room right now, if you would like to be able to rejoice at all times, then why not consider becoming a child of God today? If you don't know what to do, we'd be glad to study with you. If you do, just come forward at this time while we stand and sing the song of invitation.